Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace which connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Amazon.com gift card when you get a loan. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 163, recorded on Tuesday, May 27th, there we go, missing 7, 2014. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Gina Trapani.
Man, you know, it's a total Ron Burgundy thing when that happens. Some people, like you're reading it, and I know it's not May 2nd. But I can't help but read it as May 2nd because it's there.
Because it's there. It's in print, so it must be true.
It must be. And wait a minute. I made that print, so I must have been right when I wrote that. Either that or I'm tired. How you doing, Gina?
Good. Great to be here, as always.
Yeah, good to have you here. Ron, of course, could not make it. I think we warned you about that last week. He has something. I don't know what it is, but he ain't here. He's doing something else. But we have an awesome person filling Ron's shoes. Miriam Jouar, Tank Girl, awesome reviews of all sorts of gadgets, and one in particular that we might have on the show a little bit later today. Tease. Actually, you're going to talk about a couple of gadgets
for
that
we're
going to have on the show.
Thanks for having me. You know, May 2nd date reminded me of that last show I was on where we pretended it was the 80s and we had VHS on the show.
That's right. We actually got people after that show that were like, those aren't like the new style of the lower thirds, are they? Because they're really bad. It's like, yeah, that's the point.
Yes.
Intentional.
Sometimes
the joke is,
it flies right over their head.
Yes, the joke is always funnier when you have to explain why it's funny.
Yeah, it is.
Anyways, Miriam, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. We're super stoked to have you here today. We have a lot of cool stuff to talk about. LG's newest flagship, the LG G3. We're going to take a deep dive on that. Android on the road, or whatever you want to call it. Basically, Android in the car. Their kind of car play. We have some information, rumory stuff about that. How free apps might be killing your battery, which kind of sounds alarmist, but it's an interesting study, and we'll talk all about it. And lots of other things, too. But let's get right into it with the news. All right. So, Gina, are you excited about Project Tango?
I don't know. Does this mean I lack imagination if I say that I'm not entirely?
No.
Well, all right, let's talk about it. So Project Tango, this is Google's purportedly new tablet with advanced vision capabilities. They're reportedly planning to produce around 4,000 new Project Tango tablets in June, according to sources who spilled the beans to the Wall Street Journal. The tablet will be 7 inches with 2 back cameras, infrared depth sensors, and software that captures 3D imagery of the objects that surround the user. So why would you want this? Which is what I was wondering. Possible uses for Project Tango are indoor navigation, step-by-step directions in stores, immersive video games. Google supposedly will give the tablets to a small pool of developers ahead of any consumer push. And in fact, and we'll talk about this a little later, I think I saw a secret about this. That Google was going to give away Project Tango tablets at I.O. And all the comments were like, well, duh. So I don't know.
Interesting.
Duh. Well, clearly they're giving out Project Tango at I.O. I was like, what?
Doesn't everyone want to tango?
Obviously.
Project Tango, this isn't the first thing that we've heard of it. There's the smartphone that they have already kind of started seeding out to certain places, and we've kind of seen it in action on the show, and it's nifty. That would be an interesting move, though. It's kind of a Google Glass sort of approach, which is like, it does cool things. We don't know the extent of what it can do, so we'll just give it to people who might be more creative than us right now, and you guys come up with the use case for it. What do you think about this stuff, Miriam?
Yeah, I think, I mean, this obviously this is not like glass in the sense that I'm not quite sure how much more expensive this tech is.
Yeah.
It probably adds a little bit to the price of a normal phone or tablet. Certainly, we've seen it adds quite a bit of bulk.
here it is on a drone, by the way. That's right? What this video
and,
is.
And I'm sure the battery life is probably slightly compromised by this extra hardware.
Sure.
But you know what? I think it's cool. I think it's I like the fact that Google is constantly pushing the envelope and trying new things and experimenting.
Yeah.
And doing it so, you know, doing so non, like without apology, like just doing it and giving it, putting it in the hands of developers as much as possible. And so I'm kind of interested to see what's going to happen with this, like how it's going to evolve and if it's going to actually be useful or not. I'm sure it will eventually be useful because we've seen with Kinect, right, that this kind of data gathering can actually be helpful, right? So imagine this in being miniaturized and turned it into a kind of a standard feature on a smartphone, and then you have something kind of interesting out of it, right?
Yeah, definitely. The processor hit being the big caveat, obviously, there.
Sure.
Particularly, I mean, because it's using multiple different cameras to get all of this depth information. But it's cool what you end up being able to do with it. There was a video on the Project Tango phone that basically, once it mapped a room, you could set a rolling ball and have it actually maneuver like through your vision, the view, the screen, whatever. You can actually have that digital rolling ball maneuver through the 3D environment that is the space that surrounds you that it already mapped. Cool things like that just kind of seem to touch on the beginnings of what this kind of technology could be used for. But man, if they did that at I/O, that would be one interesting way to kickstart it. Of course, it could go the other way. It could be a Nexus Q. And
it could also be a way for them to kind of like get us to not talk about glass.
Do you think they don't want us to talk about glass?
Well, I don't know. I'm starting to worry a little bit about it because if you look, the latest push in terms of media, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, as a media person, as well as a media, you know, as a media creator, as well as a media wrangler, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at it going, most of the stuff lately has been about enterprises adopting glass for like, you know, super specific mission critical stuff, like, you know, the oil industry, airlines. But you haven't really seen that much push other than the recent, obviously, day that it went on sale for everyone. You haven't really seen that much push towards kind of the consumer side. Like, I don't know if you've noticed that.
No, well, that's actually a really good point, especially when you couple with that the fact that from a consumer standpoint, there's a perception issue from the general public that's never used glass. There's that kind of growing, I hate to say hatred, but that knee-jerk kind of reaction to glass that a lot of people have that have never used it or that are just kind of sick of seeing this glass fad that's been around for the last year and they're just sick of hearing it and seeing it on people's faces. Their initial knee-jerk reaction is to hate it. And it's, you know, it's like an anti-movement against it. Google might just want to distance itself from that. And putting it into the enterprise, like you're saying, into medical applications or whatever, doesn't really matter what it looks like as long as it's actually functional and usable in that way and in a way that other things aren't.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like the backlash is becoming the front lash or the backlash is becoming sort of codified as the reaction.
The reaction.
Class.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to imagine that with Project Tango, I can get a Rocky V style robot with an Android device dock. And then I can actually say, like, sudo make me a sandwich. And that robot will be able to navigate into my kitchen and make that happen and bring it back to me. This is what I want.
This is the future, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, we can all program our own personal Amazonian drones to go fetch us things from outside and bring it back. I don't know. The drone video is pretty cool, though, I have to say.
Although, what if...
Yeah.
Well, I guess you wouldn't need a project. You wouldn't need a Project Tango device if all of the 3D mapped data could be just be right. Downloaded to any device. But that would be actually kind of sweet if having some sort of, you know, device like this with those 3D capabilities, then it becomes a situation where you can share your 3D environment. So now I have the 3D map of San Francisco and I can deliver my good friend a sandwich because I just downloaded it to my device. Okay.
I also kind of wonder how much of Project Tango is ultimately, again, to get this technology so widespread and mainstream that every smartphone pretty much ships with it.
Right.
And now Google can map basically everything, right? Like they can map where you're walking. They can map the inside of your house. So now they have much more data again about the universe, and so they can, you know, serve better ads. Like,
I was just going to say,
like, for example, you need a new couch because your couch, you know, is got destroyed by your cat or something. And,
couldn't help but notice
some ads about that.
Yeah, you know? I couldn't help but notice that your toilet paper roll is empty almost.
Let's order some. Yeah.
Or with Google Shopping Express, you know, if this is one way for Google to map every single retail spot and every single product and make it easy. I mean, you know, Amazon has their super hyper optimized giant warehouses, right? But if Google's warehouses are basically local retail shops, this could go a long way to just making it easy for delivery people to find stuff or for regular people to find stuff.
Sure.
Yep.
All right. Well, now I'm kind of hoping that we do see these at I/O, or at least something further about it, because I think that's the hard thing for me with it is it sounds nifty. But my mind apparently isn't creative enough to come up with really good, compelling like use cases for it. And I'm sure there are plenty of other smart developers, particularly concentrated in a place like I/O, that are able to come up with those ideas. So. We'll see. Talking about rumor here, but back at CES, Google and NVIDIA announced the Open Automotive Alliance and as well a partnership with Honda, GM, Audi, Hyundai. Then we kind of heard nothing about this alliance. Now, credible rumor source to Android Police has detailed the fruits of their partnership. Android Police, of course, does what they do now with these rumors and kind of video and screenshots is that they recreate it based on what they know so that it doesn't get back around to their source to protect their sources. So what you see isn't exactly what it looks like, but this is a kind of a recreation of what they were sent. It lacks an official name according to the source, but the interface has been recreated, like I said, to kind of focus on four modes here: navigation, music, calls, and search. All voice activated, minimal to no screen interaction required, which I think is essential when you're talking about, and especially now, even versus like 2 or 3 years ago, when you're talking about, you know, using your smartphone in the car for something like this, it has to be hands-free anymore. Manufacturers are likely going to create their own version of this for their own hardware. This would simply be Google's version out of the gate. So essentially, think of this as like the Google Now experience, but for your car, and, you know, others can make their own skins for it. And potentially, hopefully, anyways, third-party services like Spotify and others that make sense in this way would exist as well.
I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. It's like if you look at what, you know, they're doing with Wear, right? Android Wear, and then, you know, kind of the whole idea is that you take what's on your phone as a notification based system, and you kind of push it out as cards to devices. So you get glass, right? You get the watch, you get the car. It just, you know, it's just an extension of the ecosystem. Makes perfect sense to me. And I think that in fact, when I do use glass now, I find what I'm missing the most is sometimes I just wish I could get my Android notifications just as they are sent to my glass. You know what I'm saying? Like, just basically like apps that are not supported, apps that don't have any kind of in API calls into, you know, the Google Glass interface in any way, shape, or form. And I think that's going to be cool. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if with Wear, it gets this extended to the car and to glass, and we're going to start seeing the APIs that they're going to make available for Wear. I think we're going to start seeing those appear for other devices and wearables, like for all kinds of different devices. For your TV, imagine you're watching TV, your phone's in your pocket, and a little card pops up at the bottom corner, you know, like kind of shifts in and says, you have a flight tomorrow, please check in for it.
Right.
You know, that.
Like, kind of like synced notification between all devices.
To me, that's what Now is, you know, it's not just notifications, it's Now. Right. Anything that Now does today on your phone, imagine that being able to have other devices, your car, your watch, your glass, your TV, other devices become kind of like a provider of, you know, like a display for these. And you can interact with them either by swiping or, you know, on glass by swiping or in the car verbally or by hitting a button and dismissing it. And on your TV, maybe through your remote. You know, like I think it's very likely to. I wouldn't be surprised if Google does something like this, and perhaps even announces an extension of what they've talked about so far with Wear at Google I/O that takes on all kinds of other devices.
Yeah, especially because you know we're going to hear a lot. Well, I would guess anyways we're going to hear a lot about Wear. There's definitely a few of the talks, a few of the. I am such a
workshop session.
There we go. Yeah, Thank you. Yeah. Man, my brain is just dead today, apparently. Camping doesn't.
You know, it's actually a good thing.
But there's a lot on Wear at I/O.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall it's a good thing to remind ourselves that Google I/O is a developer conference,
yeah.
Right? I mean, it's like we forget because as media, we're like, oh, new toys and exciting new stuff. No, it's like WWDC. You know, Apple kicks people out. And the media, the press, out right after the keynote. That's it. You're out. You're not allowed to stay because they know that it's the developer conference. They don't want, you know, the media to interfere with that in any way. And I think it makes perfect sense, mm-hmm. You know?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it seems really obvious that Google Now and like hooks into Google Now is what we're going to see in Wear and what we see in Glass. I mean, Now is very, the interface looks very Now-ish and so are the Wear, you know, screenshots that we've seen. The thing that I worry about as a developer and as someone who thinks about kind of open source and the way that there's, you know, the open source Android and sort of the proprietary Google part layer on top of Android is that Now is proprietary Google services. But the Android, the OSP, notifications, rich notifications with buttons and the things that you see in your shade, that's part of the OSP. So I would really love to see these wearable devices and Android in the car kind of support both. And it would be even better for developers if they didn't have to add new code to their apps work.
All I'm going to say is that there are other third parties out there that take notifications mm-hmm. and display them on other devices, like, say, Pebble.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So the point mm-hmm. is anyone, I think, can still go out there and kind of create there's an opportunity for other companies to go out there and create a parallel universe to what Wear is offering and create their own ecosystem around this notification and Google Now stuff. I mean, you saw it, you know, we're going to talk about the LG G3 today, but LG announced one of the features they announced is like a very much a Google Now clone because they want to create their own, you know, they want to have their own. They don't want to necessarily rely on Android for that. Mm-hmm. And their shtick is, and we'll get into this, but their shtick is basically that it's a little bit more, instead of saying like it's going to rain tomorrow, it's like bring your umbrella tomorrow. Like they go one step beyond.
Oh, it's more prescriptive about what you should
Correct.
Do.
Correct.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So to me, this all goes back to something that, you know, it's not just an Android or a wearable or anything. And it's not there's a general trend towards contextual data. And if you look at it, I think our notification tray, whether you're using an iOS device or an Android device, is all about, you know, giving you information that's meaningful at the right time, no longer just telling you, hey, you know, you get email. It's like, you know, hey, you get email and it's urgent. Because it's related to this calendar appointment you have tomorrow for a meeting and it's going to affect your flight. Like that's kind of the type of stuff we're getting into. And this goes back to our discussion about Tango. Maybe gathering more data about your surroundings gives you an ability to do this kind of stuff more accurately.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And makes a lot of sense.
With new capabilities and new ways. Yeah, it's interesting stuff. Cool. And then kind of shifting gears a little bit, and I wasn't sure how much this has bubbled up, but I kept hearing about it. So, Gina, what is this deal with iMessage?
So this is for iOS users who are thinking about switching to Android or who are concerned that their iMessage dependence or integration will get in their way when they switch to Android. And actually, this came up. Adam Pash, who was my co-editor at Lifehacker, wrote a post on his personal site, adampash.com, about how he had switched from iPhone to Android and people who had them in his address book could no longer text him, could no longer send him SMS messages because But it looked as if they had been delivered because his phone number was still sort of inextricably integrated in Apple's iMessage system. So he was sort of trapped by iMessage. And his post like kind of went far and wide, you know, Hacker News and a bunch of people talking about how like Apple shouldn't hold people's numbers hostage if they want to switch over to Android. Well, I'm really glad that Adam wrote that post because I think he made sort of enough of a stink about it that Apple has publicly acknowledged the bug, saying that they actually do are still, you know, still some numbers are sticking in iMessage, even after they switched away from Apple, and they're actually announced that they're coming out with a bigger fix. So this is really cool. Apple says the bug is only partially addressed and they're working on a device level fix. So good news. Happy for Adam. Glad that, you know, iOS users can switch and not have their number held hostage. Because basically, you know, I was talking to Adam about it over breakfast last week. He was like, "Yeah, my number is useless. Like my friends, it looks as if they've sent me a message. They haven't. I haven't gotten it." It's kind of like when Google Voice doesn't work.
I was just going to say, yeah.
It's just like rendered, yeah. You know, just like rendered completely useless. So.
No one knows anything. They're just blissfully unaware, or maybe not
Apple
so much.
Apple making it a little less hard to switch away, I guess.
Yeah. The other thing I would love for someone to figure out is the years-old issue with sending pictures from iOS to Android, and it arrives as like this weird slideshow thing. Have you seen this? Right?
Yeah.
I'm not alone, right? Because I know.
Voice.
Well, no, I know. Now I'm on voice, so I don't really get any of those. And probably my friends are sending me all sorts of things, and I just never know. And they just never know. They just think I'm a jerk, and I don't reply. But before I switched to voice, yes, I would get an MMS from my friends who had iPhones, and either it wouldn't show me anything, it would just be a blank screen, or it would give me a little play. It's an image, but it would give me a little play button, and about halfway through the length of it, the image would appear, and then it would stay up there until the play button hit the end, and then it would disappear. I'm like, what? I don't even understand what I'm looking at here. Like, is this meant to be a movie, and it just came through as an image, or is this an image, and it looks like a movie? So,
you're right. I've experienced this too.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like, speaking of iMessage, I never used it, right? I mean, I have multiple devices. I have a bunch of iOS devices. It's just, I never used it, and I turned it off on all the devices because I instantly knew this was going to be full of fail. And I'll tell you why. Because doing this right is almost virtually impossible. The only reason Google Voice kind of mostly works is because it's a separate number, you know?
Right.
And it's tied into Gmail. So there's like an entire ecosystem silo. But the way Apple tried to implement it is they decided to make it completely seamless, integrated seamlessly with your number. And if you have more than one iPhone with more than one number, it becomes completely insane. Like it's completely, you know, schizophrenic. Like and then it tries every time you add another device, you know, it tries to add the number for that device to your iMessage list. And it's like sometimes it's an iPad. The number is not used for anything because, you know, it's just a data plan. Like, it's just a total mess. So, of course, Apple's going to say, well, you know, it's tied to your email address, the one you use to log in to the iTunes store. So what's the problem? And I'm like, you don't understand. People don't care about using an email address for texting. You know, that's the whole point of texting, is that you don't have to have somebody's email. You use some kind of number. And I know it's very archaic to use numbers, but I don't know. I don't think anybody's resolved this issue properly yet.
Yeah.
And I think iMessage, you know, the problems they're having today are clearly an indication of how, you know, it kind of confirms what I always thought, which is the whole thing is just, you know, just not a good idea.
So then I have to imagine that, how do you feel, Miriam, then about Hangouts becoming more like iMessage, in the sense that, you know, some people are like, we want them all integrated, we want everything together, SMS, Hangouts all in one app, and we want it to be smart enough to know that when, you know, there's a Hangout on the other side and there's a phone number to opt for Hangouts and do this kind of smart switching, which I think is kind of part of the root of the problem where iMessage is kind of going wrong, is it's kind of saying, oh, well, you know, because there's iMessage on both sides, we'll just always offer iMessage tied to this number. How do you feel about Hangouts kind of moving in that direction? Or do you think it is?
So, I mean, it is kind of moving, but it still hasn't, like, it's still three, like, I have three Google accounts, right? So in my Hangouts app on my phones, I see four choices. I see SMS, and then my three Gmail accounts. And so I know exactly kind of what I'm doing. Like, you know, you kind of have to select. It's like in G, if you have multiple G pluses, right? You know that you can select whichever account it's going to use, and it's going to stick with that. Same with like Google Play, a store, or for example, what's the other one that always that I always get the choice? Oh, Google Play Music. Because I have three accounts, every time I set up a phone, I get the choice to pick the right account for these services.
Sure.
And once I do, it's fine. I mean, but I still separate my texts. Like, I still go to that separate SMS tab in Hangouts to do my text messages. You know what I'm saying?
Don't integrate
it. I don't use the kind of thing where it automatically picks your Hangout to do it. So right. That's just me.
Yeah, well, it's Ron too. I know Ron actually Ron's probably to the extreme. He kind of absolutely just can't stand Hangouts, basically. So
yeah, he was like deeply offended about that integration.
It's like, no, less integration, not more. Meanwhile, I'm like, bring it on.
I do like the fact that the SMS app is now Hangouts, because at least the user experience UI is the same across. Right. You know, whether you use Hangouts for, you know, IMing or whether you use SMSing, and that I like. Mm-hmm. But I think that if they ever try to somehow merge them like iMessage completely, I think Ron and I will have a rant on the podcast here together.
Excellent. I want to hear that. I want to see that. Okay, so let's take an email here. Joey from Indianapolis wrote in to say, hey, all, watch every week. Learn something every time. Thank you so much. Thank you, Joey. My question is, with rooting my Nexus 5, I know how to unlock and root, but I don't know is if I do it and then Google pushes out an update like 4.4.3, which is supposed to be a bug release, do you have to unroot and relock the bootloader to update it, or can I just update it without undoing everything? Thanks again. You guys and gals rock. So, I mean, my answer to this would be that, the you know, if you're rooting and then you're installing a ROM on top of it, hopefully you're installing a ROM that has enough support from the developers of the ROM that they're going to take those bug fixes, you know, or that update rather, and roll it into their ROM. So as long as you're kind of on top of updating the ROM that you've installed, given that they give you an update to update to, then yes. But you're not going to have to, I mean, you could unroot and go to stock, but then you're going to lose root and you're going to be back to stock. And I don't know if that's necessarily what you want to do if you've rooted and installed a ROM. So generally the developer community kind of takes care of you there, but that's where it's kind of important to do your research and find a ROM that is widely supported. You know, CyanogenMom. Not sure what that is, but
it's
yes.
It's all women.
CyanogenMom always takes care of you. CyanogenMom is the obvious example because their support and their reach is so huge. But that's just one example. CyanogenMom is ultimately going to be another one.
Mom, there needs to be a meme here. Somebody grab this video and do some sort of meme with it. Cyanogen Mom. That's pretty awesome. The mother of all Cyanogen
Moms. That's my secret new fork of Cyanogen Mom.
Yes.
Jason, what's the typical turnaround time for like a very actively developed ROM like Cyanogen?
Well, you know, actually, okay, so CyanogenMod is actively developed, but they have so many devices that they support. And I could be completely wrong because I haven't run CyanogenMod in a while. I'm actually, my Nexus 5 is unrooted at the moment. I probably have to root it, though, coming up here pretty soon. But CyanogenMod actually kind of takes a little bit longer because of the support for so many devices. And I don't think that they necessarily roll them out per device as it happens. They kind of have to mostly clear before they push it out. But on some of the ROMs that you might install that maybe like a single or you know, a small team of developers that are creating it, and it's more like a passion project and stuff. A lot of times, like back in the Motorola Droid days, I think it was Bugless Beast, Peter Alfonso's ROM. That was the one that I was like diehard on. And it's just that dude doing it. I don't even know if he does it anymore. But, you know, an update would come out and like the next night, he stayed up all night and he's like, all right, oh, I worked really hard. Here you go. You know, and
yeah, so hopefully it works well.
Yeah, so it really depends. CyanogenMod, you would think, would have a super quick turnaround, but they just support so many devices now that I think that spans it out a little bit longer.
Hmm.
So
a couple weeks.
Yeah, it could be. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds about right. Maybe more, maybe less. I suppose the real answer is you never really know. It really depends on what their backlog is. You know.
Right.
So, but anyways,
takes time.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Good software, right? Like anybody can put out the update. It's the update without any bugs, and that's always pretty darn important when you're installing ROMs. You don't want any bugs on your daily driver. So I hope that helps, Joey. It's you know, a question that I'm sure a lot of new rooters, you know, people who have never done this before, would ask. So I thought it was a great inclusion for the show because you gotta find out somehow. Let's take a break before we continue on with the show and thank our sponsor for today, and that is Prosper. If you had 72 hours, you knew they had 72 hours, and you know could have $35,000 to cover your needs, what would you do? Would you pay off your high rate credit cards? Would you start a business? Do that home improvement project that I have? You could do my home improvement project. I'd really appreciate it. Fill out an easy online application, provide just a few details, and you can see a rate online almost instantly. Prosper offers low fixed rates, and secured personal loans, no collateral required for those, and has multi-year terms available. Like I said, if you want to, you know, take out a loan and fix up my house, I'd really appreciate it. I was going through this weekend and creating a spreadsheet of all the things that apparently, you know, are on our wish list. And man, that list is long. Let me tell you, a $35,000 loan could take care of a lot of it. So definitely something to consider there. Prosper is Silicon Valley's answer to personal loans. With Prosper's innovative peer-to-peer lending process, there are no outrageous fees, no raising interest rates. You'll never set foot in a bank. That's a beautiful day when you don't have to go into a bank, I think. Prosper has more than 2 million members, lenders, and borrowers, and over $1 billion in funded loans. It's peer-to-peer lending, distributed funding of your loan. And, you know, it's basically peers lending their money to you via Prosper. It's a great system that just works. Just go to prosper.com/twit, check your rate instantly without affecting your credit score. And for a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers a $50 Amazon.com gift card when you get a loan. Go to prosper.com/twit. That's a special site just for our viewers. Up to $35,000 in just 3 days and receive a $50 Amazon.com gift card when you get a loan. Prosper.com is not affiliated with Amazon. For gift card details, visit prosper.com/twit. And we thank Prosper for your continued support of All About Android and the Twit Network. All right. Okay. This is a big block here. We've got some hardware to take a look at. I'd say the big news today was LG's event, right, Miriam? You were at a satellite event for the G3.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool what they did there. They basically said, hey, you know, we're going to have this event in London, and of course, not everybody can make it to London. So how about we have a couple of smaller events in SF and New York for those media who can make it locally? So basically, all they had a bunch of screens set up, you know, for us to watch the live stream of the event. And at the end, they had a bunch of tables set up with basically a demo area with all the phones and accessories, and even a place for us to try some of the new camera features. So really kind of cool setup. And, you know, so I did a hands-on, which is really kind of what I mostly wanted out of this, short of getting a unit, which I don't have yet, but hopefully we'll get one soon. Mm-hmm. So, you know, pretty awesome phone. I mean, I'm a big fan of the G2. And of the Nexus 5, which is kind of the G2 Nexus edition, if you want, right, since it's, you know, slightly simplified and a little more affordable. So this is showing us the G3, which is, you know, the next version. So what does that mean? That means perhaps we'll get a Nexus 6 or whatever, Nexus 5.5 or whatever out of that. Pretty exciting. So you're probably wondering, what's the big deal? The G2 is pretty much kind of like one of the best phones last year, right? So how could they have improved it? So this is what's kind of insane. They've gone for a quad HD display.
Yeah,
5.5 inches, and it's almost no bezel. This thing is just barely bigger than the G2 and has a 5.5 inch, are you ready for this, 2560 by 1440 pixel display. Something like 528... Yeah. Pixel per inch of resolution.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
right? But you think so. And I thought so until I saw it with my own eyes. And holy mother of whatever, this is like one hell of a display. It is hard to explain, but, you know, font rendering is even just further nice. You know how Full HD really makes a difference for font rendering? This kind of pushes, just kicks it up a little notch further. If you look at really tiny text on a website, it just looks so much better. And then the other thing is that really surprised me is looking at photos you've taken. Instantly, you get more detail, and you can actually see that detail on that display. And that's the thing I didn't expect at all. Like, I was like, okay, no, I don't have the best eyes. So I was like, okay, well, you know, we're going to get better font rendering and some people are going to notice. But I really didn't think I would notice. And I certainly did not think I would notice the better image rendering. Because, you know, when you start out with a 13 megapixel shot, you certainly have a lot more pixels to play with. So kind of a cool thing.
Hearing you talk about the display reminds me of when I was reviewing, I can't remember how long ago this was, the HTC Droid DNA. And that was the first HD display that I had seen on a smartphone. It was a 1080p display, first 1080p display that I saw. And I didn't know what to expect either. I was like, it kind of went into it just thinking like, oh, it's probably pretty darn unnecessary. The human eye can only actually blah, derp, derp. But when I, and what it ended up selling me on it is when I opened up my Twitter client, Plume, and the level of detail of the tiny little avatars, the avatar screens. Right. And it's such a very specific thing, but I could see things in those avatars that I just wasn't used to seeing on a phone. I was like, okay, I get it now. And then of course you see the fonts and the rounding and all that kind of stuff. And it starts to, and then eventually your eyes just get adjusted to it. So hearing what you're saying, yes, this sounds somewhat unnecessary, but I would imagine that once you have it in front of you, and particularly once your eyes get adjusted to it, it'd be really hard to go backwards.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, all phones should have this feature, but like, it's a bit of a technical tour de force, right? Like, wow. And so here's what's even cooler. Now, this will have to be tested before we can say for sure that this is actually happening. But they have this thing they called A3, and I can't remember exactly what it stands for. But basically, they're doing adaptive timing on the display, like clock speed, frame rate, and another A, I can't remember. Adaptive... such that the battery life doesn't get impacted by the additional resolution.
Wow.
So they put a 3,000 milliamp battery in that thing. And with the Snapdragon 801, which is state of the art, which you find on HTC One M8 and on the Galaxy S5, apparently the battery life is the same as what we've experienced on the G2, which had a 2,800 milliamp hour battery. So there you go. Now, that's one feature, the display, which I really just blew everybody's mind. And the other thing that I'm really excited about, because you know I'm a bit of a camera buff and a photography buff, the camera is an evolution of last year. So it's a 13 megapixel autofocus with OIS, which is optical image stabilization, but they've enhanced the OIS. So it's faster, more advanced version of OIS, you know, which was already pretty damn awesome on the original G2. But here's the killer. Here's the kicker. Here's the feature that I think is a first that nobody's done on a phone before. We've seen this on cameras, a laser range finder for autofocus.
Right.
I'm not kidding you. Like, they just stuck a freaking laser on the left side of the camera, if you look at it. And it just bounces a beam off of whatever object you're focusing on the display by touching the display, and gets it back and measures the autofocus. The result is autofocus speeds of 265 milliseconds, which is the fastest in the industry. And I noticed it, like, they had a demo setup where you could try that out with a Galaxy S5 next to it, and they'd actually like taken the logo off the Galaxy S5 so people couldn't figure out what it was. But it, you know, everybody knows. And it was just really impressive, like how this thing can just so quickly follow focus that people, like the average person who just takes out the phone and hits the shutter button or hits the screen and takes a picture, will get it right pretty much every time now.
Oh, man.
And that's a huge improvement, right? For people like me who are like to frame our shots and go crazy, we'll get a better performance from the autofocus, especially at night, right? Because you're going to be able to bounce that laser off of objects in the dark and get proper focus. But at the same time, those people who are just like the average user, just grab the phone and shoot. we'll just get awesome camera performance.
Man, if they wanted it to look really, really good, they would have put the mystery cameras, the Nexus 5, because autofocus on this is just broke.
Right, busted. And you know what? We're going to probably inherit this laser autofocus on the Nexus 6 next year, since it's a good chance this G3 is going to turn into another Nexus. I have a feeling I'd be really surprised if suddenly this year we have a change of vendor on the Nexus. I have a feeling that the relationship with LG, between LG and Google, has been pretty solid. I mean, just the fact that the last 2 years have been momentous years, I think, for the Nexus program. The phone side of the Nexus program, thanks to LG, I would be surprised if Google changed it. So, I mean, this is in a nutshell what this phone is about. The display and the camera and, state-of-the-art specs all around. It's super light and thin and quite small considering how big that screen is. Mm-hmm. And, then there's a bunch of software features. Like, there's a resizable keyboard. So, if this is your screen... you can make the keyboard kind of go different heights by like basically pulling on this little tab. Mm-hmm. So it can take up half of the screen or two thirds or one third. So you can optimize it so, you have more real estate to type or less real estate to type if that's what you prefer. It's just kind of a cool little thing. Nobody's done that before. It's so simple. It seems so simple, and then, I don't know, I didn't read too much, pay too much attention to the software. I mean, it's basically a slightly skinned version of Android 4. Something, like the latest version. Of course, it's LG skinning, so some of it is a little bit meh. But you're talking to me, who's a purist who just uses a Nexus all the time, so I don't like skins. But I have to say, for a skin, it wasn't so bad. And, nothing felt wrong about this phone. I mean, it was just, it's not metal, so it's plastic, but it's high quality. Like, it's not like Samsung where the plastics are cheap and you see the mold marks and all that. It's it's plastic, yeah, but it's not despicable to hold and to feel and to touch. So,
and then, of course, the controls on the back. Did that ever bug you, or were you always kind of good with that? I had a hard time adjusting to that. Wow.
I've never actually had a problem with it, to be honest with you. I actually liked it on the G2 and the G Flex, which I reviewed as well last year. So I would say that what they've done is they've improved the feel and the position of these buttons in the back. So I think those people who had kind of a mixed experience perhaps should try it again. I think, look, LG, it's kind of one of the way they can differentiate in terms of hardware, right? And as you know, in the Android universe, that really does matter. So I tend to like it, so I don't mind too much. But I think even if you're not a big fan, I don't think this should stop you from buying this phone.
Sure.
Because there are so many other pluses, really, that this is a tiny minor thing,
Yep. Fans of All About Android, people who were watching last year will remember that our old technical director, Chad Johnson, OMG Chad, went on a tirade about the LG G2. He was not a fan at all. We got a lot of emails about it. So, Brian, I have to ask you, as the current technical director, how do you feel?
How do I feel about the
G2? Yes, I'm putting you in the spotlight here. What do you think?
I played with the G2 a little bit, and... Yeah, the buttons did get... I never got used to them when I was trying. And basically what would end up happening is my finger would smudge the camera all the time. So I'd go to take a picture and I'd smudge the camera. But, I mean, otherwise the display... A friend of mine actually recently bought one. And he's pretty new to Android, but he loves it. And it's a good size phone, good battery. So, but I'm a Moto X guy, so...
Apparently I was wrong on the spotlight part of that, by the way.
Oh. I like that, Brian. Chooses to remain.
Stay in the darkness.
I need to be able to see you guys.
That's true. That's a really good point. Those brights get pretty bright. Cool. So there we go. The LG G3, definitely exciting hardware. Some really cool, interesting things. Before we move on, so the camera autofocus was great. What about the quality of the photos?
Oh, fantastic. I mean, it's really an evolution of the G2, which I think is one of the better. It's possibly, honestly, I'll be honest with you. My takeaway is the G2 last year and now the G3 are the best camera phones for Android today. I think that Sony's missed the boat a little bit. They're 20 megapixel. The hardware is impeccable, but the software execution is really poor. I don't think it lives up to the hype. I think that from what I've talked to a bunch of people, the Z2 does not fix that, despite the fact that supposedly they improved and fixed the software since the Z1 and Z1S. So, you know, these are the only two real options left. I mean, there's nothing. Samsung Galaxy S5 and the Note 3 are competent, very decent cameras. You know, they hold their own, but they're not pushing the envelope and pushing the bar in any way. Then Moto doesn't really have anything much to offer in terms of camera phone. There is potentially the Galaxy K, which is coming out to replace the Galaxy S4 Zoom from last year.
Right.
But we're talking about a point-and-shoot engine graft on the back of a camera, of a phone, sorry. So it's not really fair to compare. You know, the only players I think that can, you know, match the level of performance, as I said, was Sony, and they're kind of missing they're falling short a little bit. And then there's obviously competitors from other OSs, like obviously the iPhone 5S is a great camera phone, and still, and I think the Nokia ones, right? The 1520, right. The Icon, the 1020. But in terms of Android, I really think, like, I believe, honestly, I took a couple more pictures of the Nexus 5 the last few days, and I'm really impressed with the level of performance. And I really think that OIS just adds so much to the experience of a phone. Not having that feature is what I think is kind of causing Samsung some grief right now. And Apple's the only one who's managed to do without OIS so far and, you know, kind of make a good compelling point. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. I think I want to see a Nexus based on this phone and see how much they pull away, right? How much they, you know, because I still think that the Nexus 5 camera is not as good as the G2. It's one of my favorite, but it's not as good.
It looks good every once in a while. Like when it looks good, it looks great. But man, some of the performance issues with the Nexus 5 camera just drive me insane. Awesome. Well, thank you for going into so much detail on the G3. Now, you also reviewed a few days ago, I believe, the HTC One Mini 2. One Mini 2.
So this is one that a bunch of us media got to review under embargo. The embargo was 8 a.m. London time, Monday morning, which is basically midnight for us in Pacific time. So it's not the best time to publish a review at midnight on a Sunday night, Monday morning. But hey, you know, you're not going to complain. I got a phone to play with that nobody else, you know, really, very few people got to handle. My takeaway is I have it here, so let me just pull it out. Like you can see there on the website. But so I unfortunately don't have reachable right now my let's see. So that's the HTC One Mini 2. It's a
One Mini 2.
Handful. It's it's kind of a terrible name. But it looks big right now on video here, but it's actually quite a bit smaller than the M8, the HTC One. And as you can see, the most obvious way you can tell them apart is no dual camera up here, right? As far as it's supposed to replace last year's Mini, original HTC One Mini, and last year it kind of missed the mark, but I think they fixed things with this one. It's got a Snapdragon 400 quad core versus dual core last year, and that's the same processor that's in the Moto G, and it's really fast. Really nice for the money. Superb battery life, 2100 10 milliamp battery, and it lasts at least 2 days. Like, I've been amazed with the battery life. It's interesting, instead of the 4 megapixel rear ultra pixel camera that it had last year, it has a 13 megapixel autofocus, no OIS, but it takes pretty damn good pictures. Not as good in low light as the M8, obviously, because the pixel size, but it lets you zoom in more than the M8 flagship, which is interesting, right? So you kind of choose your battle here, low light versus zooming. And then what else is different about this? So mainly the processor, the screen, yes. So it's a 4.5-inch, let me unlock it, 4.5-inch 720p display. Very, very beautiful screen. It's not quite as good as the one on the M8. You know, remember, the M8 is the flagship. Mm-hmm. But this is a pretty gorgeous 4.5-incher, 720p. But the takeaway mostly for me about this is that it's kind of like HTC One M8 Redux. But most importantly, it feels amazing in hand. Like, this thing is just perfect in hand. You know how the M8 is a bit big and kind of slippery and and a little bit unwieldy? This thing is amazing for that. Like, this is, you know, your producer is a great Moto X fan. This, in my opinion, is even better in hand than the Moto X. And you know how good the Moto X is,
right? Yeah.
So that's kind of the general gist and takeaway on this HTC One Mini 2. Oh, God, what a name.
Yeah, man. It's like they dug themselves into a corner with that one, right? Like the HTC One. Of course, you know, next year we're going to do the thing where we call it the same, the phone is the HTC One again.
The Mini 2. Yeah, the inconsistency. You get the HTC One last year, and now you have the HTC One M8 to distinguish from the M7.
Right.
But then, you know, why not call the HTC One 2 then? I know that sounds terrible as well. But then the Mini 2, I just don't get it. One Mini 2 doesn't make sense.
One
why
mini
not call
two,
it
Mini 3,
you
know, Mini 4?
Not just and call it the HTC One Mini. You know, in the same way as there's a Nexus 7 2012 and Nexus 7 2013. Let's just continue calling it the HTC One Mini. And, you know, we can figure it out by the year.
There's one thing will always be the case in the Android world. It will be funny names of phones and devices. I'm not sure that's going anywhere anytime soon. That's a signature of Android. Maybe it's not just Android, but I'm pretty certain you're going to continue to see these devices come out and go, man, what were they thinking with the name on this? Wow, that was quick.
You were totally right.
Who did that?
I have to give credit to Bleak in the chat room. He sent it in a little while ago, and I've just been waiting.
Yes, Cyanogen
thank you, Bleak. Cyanogen Mom, complete with
God, I'm so glad I was on this show for this.
Fantastic stuff. Before we move on to the email, just real quick, just let you know, I have the Moto G here. I had not played around with this, actually, and maybe a little bit late to the game on the Moto G in the sense that it was, announced, what was it, like five months ago. This is the Motorola device. Is stripped down Moto X, sells for $179 for the 8 gig version of the 3G model, but it's kind of come back up to the surface again because they actually just did an LTE version of this for $229. This is not the LTE version, but I did get a chance to play with it and review it on today's episode of Before You Buy. Check the full review at twit.tv/BYB, or I can give you the crib notes right now and just basically say it's a great phone for a great price if you want to get unsubsidized and lock in a good price for a pretty darn powerful phone, particularly for the cost. This Moto G was excellent. Camera performance was pretty subpar. Oh, hey, look, you got them all queued up. Some of the pictures in good light turned out okay. Some of them just were really bad. Some of the videos super smeary, and there's my daughter jumping. So, you know, ultimately, if pictures are really important to you, I wouldn't necessarily say this gives you the best pictures in the world, although it has some cool features like slow motion and HDR, high definition, stuff like that, you know, lack of storage, no micro SD card slot. So keep that in mind. 8 gigs, it gets eaten up pretty darn fast when you have, you know, only 5 of it left when you get it stock. So that's what was the case here. But overall, I really liked it. And I think it's a great option for people who don't want to spend an arm and a leg to get a phone and certainly don't want to lock themselves into a contract. So did you have a chance at all to play around with the Moto G, Miriam?
Yeah, I actually just emailed you the link to my review on my blog as well. I got it a while back, and I really was, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the Moto X. I think it's overpriced for the level of spec and performance and features. Mm-hmm. There are some very innovative features, and it feels great in hand, but the Moto X just never did it for me, especially with the Nexus 5 coming out just like a month after, you know?
Right.
But the Moto G for $179, and, you know, I know there's an LTE version out now, but seriously, like, this is one of the best phones. And I'm hearing really good things about the Moto E, which is $129 or something dollars. I agree with you on the camera, but so, you know, we were talking about the HTC One Mini 2 earlier. Think of the HTC One Mini 2 in terms of how it feels in hand and specs, performance, the same as the Moto G, but with a much better camera and that metal build quality and high quality finish. So if you are shopping for a Moto G, but you have more money and you want like a better camera and better look and feel, That's the phone for you, the HTC One Mini 2.
There you go.
Nice.
Do you, so you had the Mini 2 at Burning Man?
Looks like Maker Faire.
I know.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait a minute, Burning Man hasn't happened yet.
I took it to Maker Faire, yeah. What's that, Gina?
Maker Faire. Maker Faire. I was wondering where these photos are from. I was like,
yeah,
Maker
Faire.
Octopus blowing up like fire breathing, fire tentacle. It's amazing.
And also there's pictures of New York in there because I was in New York earlier last week for that Surface 3 thing, Surface Pro 3. Anyway.
Oh, very nice.
So, I mean, you know, there's also
pictures
of SF in there. There's a random, bunch of random stuff. I didn't really get a chance to take that many pics. Gina, what is
that
your take?
Awesome.
Have you had a chance to play with the Moto G at all?
My, not the newish one. My mother-in-law got it actually. And it was her first smartphone, like her first Android phone. And she really likes it. She accidentally butt dials people. Like that's been her biggest problem, like switching to the touchscreen. And she definitely like at first wasn't sure about the touchscreen, but she loves it, but she likes it a lot. I think it's a really great introductory smartphone for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there you go. Man, that was a jam-packed hardware block.
Yeah, thanks you guys. That was some good hands-on.
Yeah, good stuff. Thank you so much for giving us the dirt there, Miriam.
Really, yeah, no problem. That. Anytime.
We have two emails about location tracking. So Gina, why don't you take the first one and I'll take the second one.
Yeah.
This is from last week.
Yeah, our first email is from Dwayne Lehman. Dwayne writes, the most recent episode, 162, someone asks which location app to use to locate a family member with medical problems. For location sharing in real time, Dwayne says, all the time, nothing beats Life 360. It allows for private sharing among family and friends, allows digital fences for locations, has an alert system. It's a great location app, including history for up to 30 days. My bold claim, Dwayne says, Life 360 is the location is to location sharing as LastPass is to passwords.
That's bold.
It is. It's especially designed for disasters. They even provide a call-in number that you can call and give your location to alert family members if you're separated during something like a wildfire or a tornado or flood and don't have your smartphone with you. They have emergency alerting that will not only text your family, but call them with a recording and the address where you set off the alert. It's a $5 a month plan for extra features, and I swear by it, Dwayne says. Google Plus sharing and Glimpse are toys in comparison. So, very strong recommendation there from Dwayne Lehman. I haven't had a chance to try Life 360, but after that email, I think I would. This is something I really needed.
Yeah, and it sounds very, very similar to what the emailer from last week was really looking for. We also got an email from, let's see, I scrolled past it, Derek. From Inverness, Scotland. It says, great show as always, listening to episode 162. Question about a girlfriend's mom who had a stroke and was thinking, you were overthinking the solution for Scott. My solution is a little more simpler. Using the login details for his girlfriend's mom's phone, just log into Android Device Manager on the web and it will locate the phone down to a few meters. But this does depend on cell location. It wouldn't be as accurate in less metropolitan areas, but neither would check-ins. So there you go. There's a few more options there. That one, you know, you either feel comfortable giving someone full access to that or not. But in the case of, you know, in this situation, that might actually be perfectly applicable because you can do a lot more from Android Device Manager, right? Like you can remotely wipe a device. So you want to be careful,
right?
I suppose, particularly if it's tied to somebody else's device, that you don't do the wrong thing. But that's not a bad option either. And I think some people kind of misunderstood what we're talking about as far as like the Google Plus locations. We weren't saying have her use that and check into places. Location sharing does that automatically for you. It tracks you in the same way that Android Device Manager does track your device. So that's all we're saying. There are many ways to tackle this one. And maybe we're beating the horse to death at this point. But there you go. Hopefully one of those works for you. All right, let's check out some apps.
Well, first we got a little Google Play news. The store finally has a true mobile web interface.
Oh, finally.
Kind of not not sure why you need this. I mean, assuming that you're running the Play Store app, but I guess if you're looking at it from another device or if you're on a device without the Play Store app. So if you go to play.google.com, it's got a really nice new updated interface that works well on mobile phone and a small screen.
Anytime you would pull it up before, if it happened, like when I notice it is in my Reddit app, and I'm not sure if this is the developer not building in support properly or if there's something confusing in the code or whatever, but sometimes in Reddit, if it's a subreddit and it links to a Play Store address, it won't recognize that it's a Play Store address and then take me through to the app. It'll pull it up in the browser.
Gotcha.
And it would always pull up the desktop kind of version of the browser on your mobile device, and everything was just super small. It was just like, why don't they have a mobile version for this kind of thing? So I don't know. It was like once. I'm surprised it took them this long, I guess, but there we go.
Right. And actually, so yeah, Effin Dunn in the chat room said, if you want to look at an app that might not, it isn't available for your device, it might not show up in the Play Store app, but would show up on the mobile web interface.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
So, okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Second bit of Google Play news, mobile market researcher Distimo released new rankings that show the recent expansion of gaming categories in Google Play actually resulted in a gaming revenue boost thanks to an easier experience locating games. Gaming revenue rose 15% in Google Play in April. Google had increased the gaming categories from 6 to 18 genres, so it worked.
Yeah, and
good job, Google.
What's particularly interesting about this is a lot of the gaming developers that said that they noticed such a jump. Part of the reason is because, like, as a developer, I have to imagine that sometimes it's all about opportunity, right? Google has 6 genres, and suddenly they open it up to 18. So as a gaming developer, you then, it's a kind of incumbent upon you to choose the right genre and get in early, because the earlier you get in, the more attention you might get in some of these new genres. And I think a lot of gaming developers did that, and they really reaped the benefits as a result. And not gaming the system, but more accurately representing what you have in the Play Store, because they actually let the developers choose which category it ended up going into instead of picking it for them and not giving them the option. So kind of an interesting opportunity, I guess, for developers.
Yeah. First in.
Yeah. And then this is kind of an interesting, I'm curious to hear what you guys think about this. A study conducted by researchers at Purdue University found that user tracking accounts for most energy used by free apps on mobile devices, around 65 to 75%, in fact. The remainder is what gets devoted to actually performing the app's core functions. Ultimately, what does that mean? That means that those free apps are depleting battery faster than apps that don't do things like download those ads, track behavior, and particularly over something like 3G networks, where it can be kind of costly to your battery, potentially. Angry Birds, for example, only dedicated 18% of its energy to actually playing the game. The rest of that was spent on the other things, because it's a free app, and they have things to can benefit from your data in other ways, and that's all happening kind of in the background. The study says that apps like these deplete battery quickly, often thanks to a lack in efficiency when downloading and uploading via 3G, Wi-Fi, using that GPS connection, along with running the app at a higher energy state when it's not actually needed at that point. Researchers actually restructured some of these apps, and by doing so, they actually reduced energy consumption by 20 to 65%. So, and when I kind of read through this, I was like, okay, is this alarmist? Is this saying, is this like one of those knee-jerk, like, oh no, free apps are killing my battery? Or does this sound likely? What do you think, Gina, as the developer here? Is it possible that these free apps are consuming far too much battery than they should?
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
As a developer, like, I'm constantly finding inefficiencies and seeing like things that could have been done better because you just did them quickly. Particularly something like implementing ads, not the most exciting part of building your app.
Sure.
And of course, ads are constantly just trying to be richer and more interactive and more attention grabbing. So you could see why that they might grab a lot more battery. This kind of makes makes a good case for paying for a well made app. That doesn't have ads, right? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't, that doesn't use your battery as much. These numbers sound high, but not totally impossible to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So apparently the boogeyman right now is free apps. I don't know. That's the way it sounds from the study. Like part of me wants to be like, no, that's just overstating it. But then at the same time, I could kind of see it. I don't know. Where do you fall on this, Miriam? What do you think?
I can see some truth to that, having been a developer myself. You know, like you, one of the more challenging thing if you're making a mobile app and you're using, say, the GPS and data connection is to do it in an optimal way. You know, even on iOS, it's hard. And I think I can see how some developers with less experience are not necessarily doing a very good job. I'm not quite sure if that correlates necessarily just to free apps. I think I agree with Gina when she says, you know, maybe a good reason for you to, you know, I'd like to think that paid apps are more likely to be better, higher quality in general. And I think she's right on that. And it's also why, you know, if you look at my phones, really the number of apps I have is like, I may maybe have a dozen apps installed and right. They're all really high quality, well-known, well-tested apps because I don't think it adds that much value to install some random app that does just one thing and does it not that well, you know?
Sure.
So I can see it, but these numbers do seem a bit crazy to me, but hey.
Agreed.
Yeah.
All right. So beware, I suppose. I think the advice is kind of what you're saying, Miriam, is trust the apps that you do leave on your phone. Because I will say one of the reasons that I wiped my Nexus 5 and started over again last week was because it kind of gotten out of hand. Like, obviously, we install a lot of apps to do this show because,
right.
You know, we devote a large section of the show to apps. But in doing so, you know, some of them stay on. My daughter apparently learned how to install Salon app, you know, games on my phone. So those nice. End up on there. And now suddenly, you know, my apps list is pages and pages long and my phone is really slow. And, you know, is there a correlation? Well, there might just be after reading this. So, and I will say, after wiping my phone, doing a lot better.
We should ask Cyanogen Mom.
Yes.
She can tell us. if free apps are sucking our battery life, Cyanogen Mom
if somebody has not
created this Twitter account right now, you need to create that Twitter account and register the domain and start impersonating Cyanogen Mom.
Cyanogen Mom is like the good influence on your Android life.
She gives you advice on how to use your Android phone properly. I mean, come on, this is a given.
We already have the logo. That was shown a little bit earlier. So
by the end of this podcast, it'll be the domain registered and a Twitter account out there giving advice to people.
That's right. Cyanogen Mom.
Keep your phone clean and eat your spinach, kids.
Yes.
That's right.
Oh, Cyanogen Mom's wagging her finger at you. She doesn't like the fact that you keep unknown sources checked. You need to uncheck that.
You know, you have the title of the podcast now, right?
Apparently we do, yes.
This is done.
Way too amused by this.
love it. So what is this? This app is that you're about to talk about, Gina. I just don't know how I feel about it.
Secret. The controversial, I guess you could say, app that's been on iOS for quite some time and has gotten quite a bit of press, at least in our parts, the tech nerd parts, is now available for Android. So this is the app that basically lets people anonymously post purported secrets and comment on those secrets also anonymously. In fact, you can't attach your name to anything unless you actually type your name into the comment. And it's been pretty controversial because people say things that are absolutely not true and people gossip about other people. And there's, you know, all sorts of shenanigans go on in Secret. The Android version of Secret, I actually started trying Secret because I'd heard about it on an iOS device. The Android version actually is a little bit better. You can sort your secrets by your friends. So when you sign up for the app, it knows your phone number and you give it an email address. So it knows who your friends are. So it will tell you if a secret was posted by a friend of yours, a friend of a friend, or just a sort of generally popular secret. And you can only comment on secrets by your friends or friends of friends. And the Android app lets you, you know, just see secrets by friends, which is actually a really nice functionality the iOS version doesn't have. And yeah, a lot of people have a lot of strong feelings about Secret. I happen to like it. I mean, some people say that it's a platform for bullying. Some people say that it's sort of a savior for people who want to talk about things that are too difficult to talk about or private or personal, but need to get some support. And I think it's probably both of those things. But it's pretty interesting. I mean, my Secret stream is mostly just sort of gossip and some talk about money and some talk about sex and some talk about, you know, boasting or bragging about things that people may or may not have actually done. And it's like vaguely entertaining once in a while. But yeah, it's available for Android now. What's been really interesting is seeing people discuss what bringing the Android users into the community is like. I saw quite a few sort of iOS snobs, I would call them, complaining about the unwashed Android masses ruining Secret.
Oh, you're totally
Instagram. Remember?
Yeah, I was just going to say you're totally Instagram. Talking about Instagram right now, right? It's not Secret; it's Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, right. It was that all over again, except you know, Secret is based on words, right? It's like words, so people would actually post secrets about Android users, and then there were discussions would ensue. So I don't know. How do you guys feel about Secret? Have you tried it? Do you hate it? Do you love it? Do you not care? Jason,
I'm catching up on Secret right now. Okay.
It's definitely salacious, right? Like looking through it, like you feel like you're kind of getting away with something looking at it. And to be quite honest, I'm afraid to like scan much through it while Brian is taking the screenshot because, things get a little nutso in there.
Gina, I think that I enjoy it. I think that, yes, it could be used for evil, just like it could be used for good. I do think that it's exploring a whole new dimension of our culture and society. I think it's opening up a whole, kind of a can of worms, Pandora's box.
Yeah.
You know, is there a cat in the box? You know? But it's interesting to me to see the dynamic, the interactions, the way people react to things, you know, people are more real and I kind of like that, even though sometimes it's really nasty. I do find as the head of communications for Pebble, for me, it's an amazing tool. Just think of the rumors I can spread. Like, this is incredibly awesome.
Yes.
You know, if you are in public relations and communications, this is an incredible tool. Because you can manipulate the media.
There was that story.
Right.
Someone posted a completely unfounded rumor about Apple's next set of earphones, and it was pretty realistic. This person basically saying Apple employee, they just got pulled out. It was a very sort of fleshed out story. It looked like it could have been very legitimate. It got widely reported throughout the Appleverse. The person finally came out and said, "I was just trying to say something provocative to see if anybody was listening, and apparently the whole world was listening." So yeah, I mean, and like I said, I saw a rumor about Project Tango tablets getting distributed to Google I.O. So I mean, I don't know. I think that's kind of fun. But you're right. It definitely, this one person did manage to manipulate the media in a really interesting way. So and that's happened. And on Whisper, I think it was Whisper, which is a very secret-like app, where somebody posted about Gwyneth Paltrow having an affair with her lawyer, and it was just blew up this whole discussion about who's a public figure and who's not. And is it okay for people to talk about other people, to slander others and these kind of, communities? And that's a really interesting conversation.
Yeah.
Definitely.
What I wonder about with this is the more people, like before ever using it, I think I had made up my mind on it, which is that I don't get it because specifically for the fact that everything on there is questionable. Like there is no way to validate anything. And that's obviously the purpose of this app, right? You can't validate who I am when I say this thing. So therefore I can feel comfortable saying it or whatever, but you can't validate anything. So how could any news organization take anything seriously on Secret?
Yeah, I don't think the news organization really can. Yeah.
No, but at the same time, if you have your fingers on the pulse or whatever that, that news is, you might have other data available to you that help you make a decision whether that rumor or that secret is real, more likely to be real or not. And I think that's kind of what's interesting. The other thing that I think is really cool about it is that it's an outlet for people to be more real. Like, as I said, it's like you can say things you wouldn't normally say, and kind of get away with it. And sometimes it's terrible, but sometimes I think it's healthy and it's been good. And I've seen some good stuff that was really quite funny, quite frankly. I want to interrupt this briefly to say somebody has created the Cyanogen Mom Twitter account.
Yes. Excellent.
Thanks to yes.
All look right. At that.
Yeah, I just looked down at my phone. And it says Cyanogen Mom started following you.
Providing providing motherly advice for sanitary device management.
Oh, there we
go. Oh, I didn't mean it to make it such a Puritan thing with my example.
Oh, this is just getting better and better.
It's really well, though, Gina. I think it works. Oh, Sinogen Mom just tweeted at me, wash your hands before device use.
Oh, that's awesome. I love seeing where Sinogen Mom will go. And I look forward to following her advice as I get older.
She always talks in all caps like that.
Yeah, Sinogen Mom, you got your caps lock on. Aren't we all always correcting our parents? Like, you know, don't always type in all caps. You too, Cyanogen Mom. So there we go. Secret, if that sounds like your bag, I'm going to keep it installed and I'm going to keep looking at it. It's just hard for me to take any of it seriously. But I guess that's not the point.
I prefer like the personal confessions of insecurities, yeah, like to anything else, just because people don't, you know, because there can be a support, you know, sort of network that comes up around somebody confessing something or talking about something, sure, that's difficult for them. And absolutely, that's kind of beautiful to see. And you feel this, you know, camaraderie with a complete stranger who you don't know because you share these insecurities too, because we're all, mm-hmm, just stupid humans, you know, whatever. So I like that aspect of it. But cool, as a news organization, like, it's not going to be a source for you, Jason. And it should.
No, and I wouldn't expect that it is, but it's kind of amazed me that there have been a few of those things where it's like the news, you know, everybody, you know, because it's all an echo chamber, right? So everybody's
right.
All it takes is one blog to make it take something on Secret seriously. And then suddenly, right, Everybody's talking about it as if it's probably going to happen. Turns out, right, no, it's just some dude seeing what he could say.
There's also the dimension. It shows you, you know, if it's a friend or a friend of a friend, yeah, or if it's just somebody around.
Sure.
So I think that matters. For some people, they might take a rumor more seriously if it's coming from a friend. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why, you know, you're right. Any journalist worth its salt, their salt, is not going to take this at all ever as a reference. But it could, you know, there's a gray area there, I think. And that's what's kind of interesting about it.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Cyanogen Mom's advice for when you're at the airport is to not use public USB charging stations. There you go. Okay, Rob.
And oh, that's good.
You're like, I see what you did there with that joke. Rob in Salt Lake City wrote in to say, I'd like to share an app for corporate users. There are many of us corporate Android users who are stuck on an Exchange email system. For years, I've been searching for a great Exchange email app. The default Android apps are decent, but they are not maintained and lack important features. Furthermore, I started having major problems with the app, like failing to send emails once I've clicked send. I'm an attorney, and that issue created a major headache for me several months ago, as you might imagine. I finally found a great one. The app is called Nine, Exchange Active Sync. It's a beautiful app that thus far has been flawless for me. It has many great features like exchange category flags and conversations. One of my favorite features is a one-by-one unread email counter widget. You'd be surprised at how difficult it is to find that. Also, it has a tablet optimized interface and works great on my Nexus 7 2013. The developer is very responsive and updates the app constantly with new features added all the time. The app currently costs $9.99 via an in-app purchase, and it is worth every penny. I think that's kind of a sale price right now. Let's see here. There are many Outlook web access apps out there, but those apps are designed to access the Outlook web interface, not the Exchange Active Sync server, and therefore lack critical features like push mail. So there you go. You know, I don't necessarily have a use for an app like this, so I'm taking your word for this, Rob, but it does look like a very well-designed app. And I have to imagine you're not alone. There's a lot of people looking for this kind of thing. So if you are, heed Rob's advice. Check out 9 Exchange Active Sync. And I don't know. Tell us what you think, aaa@twit.tv, if this app solves a problem you might be having. There you go. Do you guys use Outlook, ActiveSync, or any of this stuff at all? Or no?
I don't.
There we go. All
right. I don't have to. I have to say I've worked with jobs where I had to.
Yeah.
So I sympathize with those of you, right, who have to.
Yes.
I'm only saying boo because I am really happy and no longer have to deal with it.
So, yeah, same here. It's been many years since, yes, I've had to deal with Outlook. Yeah, yeah, with Exchange.
Me too. All right. Hey, what do you think? Should we get into the arena? Let's do it.
So many enter, but only one lives.
Android Arena.
Arena. Okay, last week's episode 162, we had four apps in the arena. It was a jam-packed arena. Let's see who won. Do Not Disturb, 88 votes, 37% of the votes came in for Do Not Disturb. List My Apps came in a close second at 30%. Beautiful Icon Styler. I thought that one was going to do better than it did, Gina.
I thought I had a shot. Yeah. I thought I had a shot. I did not have a shot.
You were a contender.
I thought I was a contender.
22% of the votes there. And then Swarm, that's Foursquare's new app, which I'm not seeing a whole lot of love for. I've noticed the last week people are kind of like, wow, way to kill my Foursquare usage by, you know, making us use Swarm. So as the week wore on, I was like, I wonder how that's going to do. So there you go, 11% for that. All right. So last week, in the case of last week, I guess the guest... our guest, who was Andrew Martinick, won the arena. Good job, Andrew.
Yeah. Oh, Andrew's awesome.
Andrew's part of the statistic. Maybe you'll be part of that too, Miriam, this week. Maybe your app will win. We'll certainly see. I have yours as well as Gina's installed. But Gina, you get to go first.
I'm the big L, so I get to go first.
Yeah, that's right. I was going to say it, but there you go. Okay, so I have it installed and I can show it off. Go ahead and talk about it.
All right. So my pick this week is called Up2. It's a free calendar app. And so what it does, in addition to what your sort of normal calendar app is, I usually just use regular Google Calendar app. Up2's selling point or differentiation thing is that it overlays a secondary, it kind of has a secondary layer to your calendar of events that you might be interested in but aren't actually on your calendar. So once you start up to, you can go through a list of calendars that you might want to subscribe to. So say things like Netflix releases or your favorite team's game calendar or your Facebook events calendar. For that, you have to sign and make a free up to account, by the way. So you can subscribe to as many calendars as you want, local concerts. There's really movie releases. There's quite a few calendars. Reality TV premieres, yeah. Jason scrolling through them here. Stanley Cup playoffs, TechCrunch. TechCrunch has a calendar? Who knew? The Bachelorette. So tons and tons of calendars. So then once you start following what are these calendars of interest to you, when you then scroll through your own events, which, by the way, Up2 does a really nice job of discovering your calendar, if you're using Google Calendar anyway, like I do, and just adding in all your events, no big deal, there'll be this other layer of other events, and Jason's scrolling through his. It shows up as like a little kind of, it looks like papers kind of stacked up. Let's see.
Down at the
do
bottom
see anymore,
there,
Jason. Yeah.
So I've clicked it, and then it's going to show me intermix. Oh, I see. There you go. So there's this.
Yeah. So there's one. Yeah. So you can pinch to zoom and basically expand the extra events. So here you've got, I guess this is a concert going on at the Fillmore.
The Fillmore. Yeah.
So it gives you information about it, and you can swipe to the right in order to add that event to your calendar. So it's kind of nice, yeah. So like add.
Oh yeah.
Or you can say hi, don't show this to me. So it's pretty much like, hey, if you're looking at your calendar and it's a Friday or a Saturday, and you're like, where should we go to the movies? What should we watch on Netflix? You can just expand this particular bit. Now it's interesting. So you're getting one event. I was seeing a few, and it would just kind of look like a stack of pages. You'd have to expand it. Go down to like Friday evening. I found that weekends were particularly.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, okay. So there's a movie release, Maleficent, A Million Ways to Die in the West.
So you said if I. Okay, so hitting that actually shows.
Yeah, so
them.
Right, so that actually expands it, right? So by default, it's collapsed, right? And then you pinch to zoom and open it up, right? So
gotcha.
You can see, okay, these are the movie releases this weekend, and there's, you know, Netflix and lots of different primetime TV shows. So I can see, you know, when does Mad Men start up again? Kind of Google Now-ish, but this is more like, you know, I'm looking at my calendar and is there something else going on? I'm looking for something to do. Is there something else going on?
Right.
So like Facebook events, you know, I very rarely commit to going to a Facebook event, but if I'm bored looking for something to do, I could be like, so-and-so's having drinks for my birthday. Like, I'll go to that. And you can just add it to your calendar instantaneously. So it's just kind of this extra layer of things you might be interested in added to your calendar. Also, the interface is pretty nice. It's good looking. There's a decent widget as well. You're following Game of Thrones. Nice. You've got quite a few good calendars there. I believe you can also add custom calendars by URL. And there's a friend. What does Friends do? Can you subscribe to Friends calendars? I think you can. So it's just kind of like extra calendar options on Crack if you're looking for events or if you want to keep track of events without adding every single one to your regular calendar or subscribing to it full on so you see it so you see the events everywhere.
That's
they're NBA playoffs. Yeah, Silicon Valley. I am also subscribed to that one. So upcoming episodes.
So it kind of has its own kind of social network quality to it. Like I'd be creating an account within Upto and following people through Upto. It's not
right. You don't have to create an Upto account in order to use the app. There are certain calendars that it asks you to do so. So I never actually even created an account, but I tried to add like my Facebook events, and then it did prompt me to just create an account. And honestly, I was like, yeah, I'm good. You know, whatever, it's fine. But yeah, there is a social aspect. So if you have Upto friends, you can also subscribe to their app. So you know, if you got your kids, you know, soccer team or, you know, your friend's softball team or whatever, you could also add those kinds of calendars.
Oh, hey, look at that. All about Android with guest Miriam Jawar. Oh, wow.
I'll be there.
That's tonight. That's like,
wow.
Yes.
It's like right now.
Calendar. That's awesome.
I didn't realize this is right now. Oh.
We win.
Excellent. So there you go. So that
See,
is
Gina, you win to- right there.
Because you made it into Gina's right. app.
Sneaky.
That's Upto, one word, U-P-T-O, all one word, Upto. And that is free. Excellent.
Thanks for the demo, Jason.
Yeah, that looks great. Looks like a really nice app. Good stuff. All right. So let's see here. Miriam, why don't you go next? I'll show it off.
Sure. So I wanted to cover Square Order. I've got a hidden agenda here because I'm actually very mad about Square Order. That's why I thought maybe I'd get some air and those people at Square would actually pay attention. So I don't know if you followed the saga. Square Order is a beta app right now. You have to kind of sign up to their Google group or whatever to become to get access to it. And I don't know if you're familiar with Square Wallet. You're probably familiar with Square, the service that lets stores have like an easy way to take credit cards, and they have like this little card reader. And usually now they even have like this iPod stand. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
You guys are familiar?
Yeah,
with
we've
Square?
Had it on the show a few times, yeah.
So here's what we love about Square in SF. A lot of stores, especially coffee shop, take Square Wallet. So you can basically pay with your phone anytime, anywhere you go. But here's what Square, the company, decided to do. They pulled the Square Wallet from the App Store, both the iOS and Android App Stores, and replaced it with this app, Square Order. Because they have this new service that on the web that lets you basically order stuff ahead of time from restaurants so you can pick it up later. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of doing that, they basically rendered all the stores that were taking Wallet completely obsolete. So this Square Order app no longer works with any store that took Square Wallet. There is some overlap. Some of the stores have signed up for the new service, and of course you can use the Square Order app with them. But most store that were just in the past just taking Wallet do no longer work with this app whatsoever. And if you delete the old Square Wallet app from your device, you cannot reinstall it because, I mean, unless you save the APK somehow on Android, it's no longer in the store. So basically, Square has completely obliterated the whole concept of paying with your phone using Wallet, which everybody loved, and replaced it with this thing that most merchants are not using yet. And so I featured this to hopefully, you know, I'm not saying the app is bad. It works just fine. I mean, it's perfectly useful and usable for its intended purpose. But the problem is that it's in replacing and getting rid of Square Wallet, they are basically doing a disservice to their most loyal customers. Those are the people who really love Square for the fact that they can pay with their phone wherever they go. So I've actually, you know, kind of talked to them about it and through their support channels a little bit. And they're like, yeah, you know, it'll take a little while for the vendors to adopt this technology versus the old one. But I don't see anybody doing that. Like all the coffee shops in my area that take Square Wallet no longer work with Square Order. And, you know, of course, you know, if you know this ahead of time, you can keep both apps on your phone. But it's just like, it's just a bit of a fail on their part. And so I want to kind of put it out there. If you're a Square Wallet user, first of all, don't install Square Order and remove Square Wallet from your phone. Keep both apps. And secondly, talk to Square and let them know that, you know, you want to continue using Wallet. And if you're talking to your merchants, to your local coffee shop or wherever else you go that you pay with Wallet right now, let them know that the only way they're going to be able to take payment in the future will be if they sign up for the new system on Square so that the Square Order app works. That's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. So are you sacrificing your thing to make a statement?
Yes.
Wow. I'm impressed.
Wow, that's crazy.
Although I will say,
well, I figure out I have a vehicle, so I might as well go with it.
I mean, you might as well. And it's not like the app is designed poorly. The app actually looks pretty.
No, the app is
great.
Gorgeous. I mean, Square's all Square apps have always been great.
Yeah.
The Wallet app on iOS is particularly gorgeous. I don't know. I'm not a, you know, I don't work in the service industry, but I've only heard good things about the Square register app, the one that the retailers use. So it's just weird to me that they would throw out this whole Wallet thing and kind of render it useless to people who want to install the app and not roll it into this new order app by default as a legacy thing, and then kind of force the merchants to use this new system and have them sign up for it in order to continue providing a service that they were providing, basically. Mm.
Yeah. Well, here in Petaluma, the only stores that apparently are here is Whole Foods, which is about to close, so they're not taking orders through the app.
Right.
However, by thumbing through, I realized I'm really hungry, so I wish they were taking orders, because I'd order right now on the air, and then I go pick it up.
I made you realize, like Cyanogen Mom would,
yes,
by reminding you that you're hungry.
Thank you, Cyanogen Mom. I will eat dinner. I will make sure not to put it off too far. Thank you, Cyanogen Mom. So that is Square Order. Do or do not install it.
No, it's basically.
Cyanogen Mom, follow me on Twitter so I know you're okay.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, ultimately, it's like there's no danger in installing the Square Order app. Just don't uninstall Wallet if you're using it.
Right.
So
if you sign into the beta, does it require that you uninstall Wallet?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
It doesn't. But the thing is, you don't know, you know, if you didn't know that, you're kind of screwed. So don't uninstall Wallet, because if you do, you won't be able to reinstall it. Keep both. Continue using, or you start using Order if you want to order ahead at a restaurant or a place nearby. And also go to all your vendors that use Wallet right now and let them know that they actually need to reach out to Square to be in the new system. And that way, you know, when they pull the app for good, the old Wallet app, you'll be able to continue paying there.
Right. Well, there you go. Okay, so that's like a review / cautionary tale. I'm not sure we've had one of those in the arena, but
I kind of was creative.
I know.
Worked well, didn't it?
You were. Hey, and
more chances to win for me. So
that's
I'm
right.
good.
That's right. Boom. Well, and who knows? You could come out the victor, Miriam. Strange things happen in the arena. We never know how it's going to turn out.
It's true. It's crowdsourced, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So my app is actually pretty darn simple, and it's made by Samsung. It's called Samsung Power Sleep. We may or may not have talked about this on a previous episode at some point. I feel like maybe it came up at one point, but I've been using it lately. Though when I launched the app, it'll look like I haven't. And that's only because I wiped out my phone. And so all the stats that I had on it actually went with it. So whatever. But what is it? So essentially, you can donate your processor to the researchers at the University of Vienna. What they are doing is they're decrypting protein sequences that benefit cancer and Alzheimer's research, among other things. And it's not just you know, donating your processor. I mean, that's the main thing that it does, but it's also an alarm clock. So basically, you can use it with the alarm clock functionality, or you can choose not to. And you can actually set up multiple alarms if you want to. But essentially, what this does, right, is that I could set an alarm clock for, you know, every morning at 6 o'clock. And in the settings, I have it set up so it has to be plugged in, and you can set the time that, you know, after this time, it kind of kicks in. But so what it does is when I plug my phone in at the end of every night and it's connected on Wi-Fi and it's plugged in and it's past that time, it will at some point throughout the course of the evening connect to the servers of the University of Vienna and it'll start doing calculations for them. Average data transmitted is 1 meg per package. Half of that for the upload at the end, and the calculations take around 30 minutes to an hour per data package. So I'm basically allowing the processing power in my phone to, you know, do research for Alzheimer's and, you know, cancer research and whatever other things that they're working on. There is no personal data collected here. And it's really just kind of a set it and forget it thing. You don't even have to use the alarm clock portion. If you want to donate without the alarm clock function, you can just go over here and hit start. And it's not going to work in here because A, I have to be charged up past 80% for it to even work. And B, the Wi-Fi in here is really – I noticed it was having issues trying to use the Wi-Fi here at the studio because there's so much interference and so much random settings in the Wi-Fi and everything here. So, yes, Virgil in the chat room says something like folding at home, but for Android, and that's exactly what it is. So I have this set on, and then at the end of every night, I'll go to bed and I'll wake up in the morning, and this will say your contribution is X amount of hours. Before I wiped up my phone, I had offered 15 hours. And you don't necessarily know exactly the impact of offering your phone's processing power for that, but considering the fact that, you know, my phone's just plugged in and I'm sleeping and I don't have, an internet plan that this is going to matter a whole lot, that this is going to take away valuable data, you know, that I can use throughout the course of the month, why not? Just kind of running and doing some good while I'm sleeping. So that's what it is. It's Samsung Power Sleep. If you want the alarm clock functionality, you can. And essentially what that means is at 6 o'clock when my alarm goes off, it's going to stop processing. So your processor will be freed up and ready for you to take your phone off the counter and use it all day. So anyways, interesting stuff, I thought, particularly because it really stays out of the way. And hopefully they're putting some good use to it. That is Samsung Power Sleep.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Donate your bandwidth for good.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Like SETI at home.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the other thing is there is another app like that was announced by HTC in collaboration with a university in the US or UK as well.
Mm-hmm.
At Mobile Congress, alongside like the HTC press event at Mobile Congress is really meh, but it had two announcements. One with the Desire 816, which is their mid-range large-screened Android device. And the other one was this very, very similar app that they were going to make available for free for any Android phone.
Power to give.
Yeah, I knew we had one of these on, and I couldn't remember if it was the Samsung.
Yeah,
it was my app.
That's the only reason why I remembered. Yeah. I had done Power to Give.
We've done so many apps on this show; it's hard to keep straight. All right, well, cool. I'm actually happy that both of them made it then.
Yeah. Right. This is the kind of app I think we should do more than once.
It's funny how Samsung has their own and HTC has their own.
No, absolutely, right?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Samsung copied HTC on this one.
Could very well be. It really just stays out of the way. And I probably would uninstall it if I was having issues with it or, you know, wake up and force closes and all that kind of stuff. But the app is pretty straightforward, well-designed, and does, I think, what it says.
What you're not seeing is that it's slowly transforming your Nexus 5 into a Galaxy S5.
Wait a minute, No.
Putting TouchWiz on your phone.
Don't put TouchWiz on my phone, but do improve the camera, please. The autofocus, that's all I ask. S5, bring the autofocus on it. Then I'll buy into it. Well, there you go. All right, so that's Samsung Power Sleep. So we have three apps this week. You can vote for your favorite by going to AAApoll.com/163. AAApoll.com/163. Let us know which is your favorite app of the week. Is it Samsung Power Sleep, Square Order, or Up To? Early reports are in, and it's pretty close to tied. But Up To is out on top. So
yes.
Don't say
good.
It.
Do not vote for Square Order.
Oh, I don't know. That might bring more attention to it, or does that say, "Hey, we like what we see here"?
I was wondering
here.
When I said that whether
brilliant
it would...
reverse psychology going on here.
Yeah. Right? Like, I'm not sure what to do this week.
Yeah, this is not going to work for me.
That's okay. You want to know why? Because we'll have you back, and you can have a proper entrant that you feel strongly about.
I promise you that the next time I will make an effort and get something that not only is good, but actually is not like some sort of revenge
pick in the arena. Well, Miriam, it's been great having you on. Really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing all of your thoughts on everything, and particularly your thoughts on the G3, because that was kind of a big deal today. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks so much for having me. You know, I love being on the show, and you guys are fantastic and graceful hosts. And, anytime, just let me know. If I can make it, I'll be there.
Aw, shucks. We'd love to have you back. Let people know where they can find all your cool stuff and what you're doing.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm at Tankgirl, T-N-K-G-R-L. It's Tankgirl without the vowels, if you forget. On Twitter, you can find me on tankgirl.com, spelt the same way. That's my blog. There you'll find my YouTube and my Flickr, which I use for videos and photos. I primarily do reviews and hands-ons with handsets, phones, smartphones. I also do phone photography a lot. So a lot of it is about the quality of the cameras and stuff like that. Every now and then I'll review a car or some other consumer electronics device. I like tablets and laptops from time to time as well. So, you know, just keep an eye on that. And as you probably know, full disclosure, I do work for Pebble, the smartwatch company right here is my Pebble Steel. And, so that's where you can find me professionally.
Awesome. And hopefully back on All About Android, you'll find Miriam here as well very soon. Thanks again, Miriam.
Thank you.
Thanks, Miriam.
And Gina, what's going on? I'm seeing new insights in ThinkUp every day.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah. When I'm not here on Twit, I'm working on getting my company off the ground. Our product is ThinkUp, thinkup.com. It's social networking analytics for regular people, not brands, regular people. And Rego101.thinkup.com. It's one of my favorite ThinkUps.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure you visit it daily. You check in on my stats.
I check in daily. I do. I'm trying to get you to tweet more, Jason.
Yeah, I know. Really. That's exactly it. I do need to tweet more. If not for any other reason than to see my statistics on
get more
on
insights. Yeah. When I'm not working on ThinkUp, I also co-host This Week in Google here on the Twit Network, and that airs on Wednesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, and I'll be on tomorrow with Leo and Jeff Jarvis, and hopefully a cool guest. Not sure who's coming on yet, but that'll be a lot of fun. We talk a little bit about Android and a lot about Google and the cloud and Facebook and Twitter and all that good stuff, so it's a good time.
Right on. Thank you, Gina, as always. Brian, what about you, Mr. Man of the Shadows?
Yes, I got to stay hidden.
Oh, I know.
Because no one will figure out my identity otherwise.
Except all the times that you've turned the light on. But anyways.
Hiss. Boo hiss.
What you got going on?
When I'm not TDing all about Android, I'm either busy doing reviews for Before You Buy, and I co-host with a really strange priest named Father Robert Ballester on Know How on Thursdays, so you can watch our projects on that. And you can also follow me on Google+, where I post some of my reviews, pictures of the Pelham River, and motorcycles, basically. So keep in touch. And thanks. I have a new follower on Twitter. Cyogen mom.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, Cyanogen mom.
Makes me feel all warm and fuzzy.
Cyanogen mom.
Cyanogen mom wants you to think twice before saying her name so that you say it appropriately.
Yeah, exactly.
She watches out for us. Yes. Oh, wow. If you must use public USB ports, wear protection. You said that already.
Yeah, well, Cyanogen mom, I've heard Cyanogen mom say that so many times. I'm going to pass it along to my kids too. So, there you go.
What about you, Jason?
You can find me at about.me/Jason Howell. I do music. You can find that at yellowgoldmusic.com. I got to write more music at some point. But before I can do that, I need to find more free time, which isn't going to happen because I also have a new show that's launching. And I believe, there you go, Yellow Gold. Yay. I believe it's kind of public-ish information that Lisa had said the release date. June 13th is going to be the new Android app show, and you might recognize the name because we totally swiped it from this show. It's called Android App Arena, and we're not changing the arena here, but we're just adding more arena. So there will be
more arena.
And this won't be the intro. This won't be the intro video. This is gonna stay with this show. But it's gonna be really cool. Targeting like a 15-20 minute show. Every week is gonna be different combination of things. One week we might focus on like a showdown of app category, you know, like note-taking apps, comparison, what are the best. Another week might be a focus on gaming, you know, just switching it up every week, but keeping it true to just app discovery. There will always be like the big app of the week, you know, like Swarm would have been on a couple of weeks ago, that kind of thing. The app that everybody's suddenly talking about that just kind of busted on the scene. And semi-regular developer interviews, specifically not like in the weeds technically, like not talking about like, how do you use this tool? Maybe a little bit of that, but really just kind of back, you know, stepping back so that it can benefit all developers as far as like how you market your apps, how you come up with your ideas, that kind of stuff. So I don't know, just switch it up, but keep it super app focused and try not to like step on the toes of this show. I think they'll be complimentary more than anything. So
you're going to keep it quick and dirty, aren't you?
Gonna try. That's what CyanogenMom advises. I always
she
listen.
She wouldn't say Cyan- quick, and she would never use the words quick and dirty.
That's true.
She never.
CyanogenMom, you're a bad influence on me. So there you go. Android App Arena launching with a live component June 13th. It's going to be similar in a large degree to i5 for the iPhone in the sense that the app reviews are kind of pre-recorded, but the developer interview is going to be live, and there's going to be a live kind of viewing party, for lack of a better word, where I'll be on set and we'll talk about the episode. So there will be a live component to it, and that's June 13th is the start of that. So next week I'll probably have more information, but there you go.
So excited.
Yeah, thanks. Sweet. I'm really excited too. There's been a lot of buildup and a lot of work on it, so... And man, the music and the graphics are awesome. I can't wait for everyone to see that.
Well, given our bumper, you're going to really get a high bar.
Thanks, Gina. But that is it for this week. CyanogenMom, keep it clean, Jason. Thank you, CyanogenMom. I will. How about I end the show, CyanogenMom? That's it for this week. Send us a voicemail, or leave us a voicemail, rather, if you want to have your voice be heard on the show, 347-SHOW-AAA. You can leave us an email at AAA@twit.tv or attach a link to a video, and your face will get on the show, too. That's pretty cool. Find us on Twitter. We are at Android Show on Twitter. We have a subreddit, twitaaa.reddit.com. We're on Google+. We have a community there. Just do a search for All About Android in the place that you like, and you'll find it. Show notes and past episodes at twit.tv/AAA, as well as YouTube, iTunes, and everywhere else. That's it for this week. We'll see you next Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, for another episode of All About Android.